Das Doak Famine Village auf den Spuren der großen Hungersnot. Hallo, ich bin Chris vom Podcast Erlebnis Irland. Ich bin Reisefotograf und Podcaster. In der heutigen Episode sind wir zu Besuch im Doak Famine Village. Etwa 1 Million Iren starben an der Folge der Kartoffelfäule. Es gab eine riesige Hungersnot. 1 Million Menschen, das waren ungefähr 12% der irischen Bevölkerung. Und weitere 2 Millionen Iren wanderten aufgrund der Hungersnot der Grand Famine aus. Die große Hungersnot in Irland, auch bekannt als Gortamor auf Irisch oder Irish Potato Famine auf Englisch, war eine verheerende Hungersnot, die sich zwischen 1845 und 1849 in Irland ereignete. Die Ursache dieser Tragödie war die Kartoffelfäule, die aus Amerika nach Irland eingeschleppt wurde und die Hauptnahrungsquelle der ärmeren irischen Bevölkerungsschicht zerstörte. Seit 1541 befand sich Irland vollständig unter englischer Herrschaft. Der Boden in Irland, der Grund, gehörte hauptsächlich englischen Großgrundbesitzern und die irischen Bauern bearbeiteten das Land als Pächter und bauten Getreide und Kartoffeln an. Die Kartoffeln waren das Grundnahrungsmittel der irischen Bevölkerung, weil sie waren einfach, billig und schnell anzubauen. Etwa die Hälfte der 8 Millionen Iren ernährten sich ausschließlich von Kartoffeln, was zu einer gefährlichen Abhängigkeit führte. Aus Amerika wurde die Kartoffelfäule importiert und diese zerstörte große Teile der Kartoffelernte und das führte zu einer katastrophalen Hungersnot. Etwa 1 Million Menschen starben infolge der Hungersnot. Etwa 12% der irischen Bevölkerung, das habe ich ja schon erwähnt, entsprach das. Weitere 2 Millionen wanderten aus, um der Not zu entkommen. Viele starben auf der Überfahrt nach Amerika. Bis heute hat sich Irland von diesem massiven Bevölkerungsverlust nicht erholt. Politisch verschärfte das die Situation damals zusätzlich und die Erinnerungen daran prägen das Leben in Irland noch heute. Die große Hungersnot war eine der tragischsten Episoden in der irischen Geschichte und hinterließ tiefe Spuren im kollektiven Gedächtnis des Landes.
Yes, my name is Pat Doherty and this part here is all about the 1900s, what we're in here at the minute, and the famine and other things is behind those houses, so it's completely different. This first house I bring you into on the left here, myself, my family, we lived in this one to 1984. This is our home, the thatched cottage. If you'd have come to this area in 1984, down to the bottom half a dough with three slate roofs, all houses in the area were thatched, except for three houses, and that was 1984. If you're not from Ireland, you'd wonder what changed the whole lot. When we look back at those days, the big change for Ireland, we became part of what's called the European Common Market. And the big thing it did for Ireland, it took away trade barriers. And for the first time, a wee small country, a small population, we could sell to Europe and across the world. And because we can sell to different countries, all these companies arrived from America, Canada, elsewhere. And they manufactured here and they create jobs. But they all use Ireland as their base so they can sell to European countries also. Because the way Europe works, manufacture in one European country, sell it to others. And the company came here to this remote place at the beginning. It was an American company called Fruit of the Loom, which made T-shirts. And one time employed over 2,000 people here. But today we go down to the south of Ireland, like Dublin, Cork or Galway, all different today. Computer companies, internet companies, medical companies. And that's what gave us the start we are today. So by going through this museum, the message you should get by going through here is when the country can't sell its own goods, a country finds it very hard to survive in this world. We can manufacture different things today in Ireland, but if people don't buy these things, they're of no use to us. The world we live in is all about selling things. Mm-hmm. So, take you here now. We're going to... I'll just give you a rough idea of what
oh, that's lovely.
Is happening here.
How long does the museum exist already?
We started in 1997. So every year we added a part onto it. And most of the parts we added onto is questions people kept asking. And this is our home house we're in now. And there were six of us in it. Two boys, 2 girls. You can see my parents' picture on the wall. We made it bigger house. We've broken through the gable wall into the barn and never had the door, because that was the barn. Mm-hmm. And because these houses are only one bedroom, the bedroom has two beds, but the kitchen always has two beds. So that's the kitchen. We have a bench here. It's called a settle bed. So at night time, that folds down. You sleep inside like a box. And you get out of bed in the morning and you fold it up. Now you can see yourself as a seat for sitting on. What we have here in the corner is the kitchen bed. This one has curtains on it. Sometimes the kitchen bed has doors. If the house is one bedroom, the kitchen bed is a private room in its own. I mean, you lie and sleep in bed all day in the kitchen, keep the doors closed, and outside the bed they sit or they work beside you at the fire. School children would ask, now, who'd sleep in a bed in the kitchen? But across the world, you see, farmhouses were similar. Most of them had a grandparent in them. And the deal was, if you inherit the house, if you inherit the farm, the deal is you have to look after your parents. No nursing home them days. The only problem with our grandparents sleeping in a bed in the kitchen, your grandparent controlled the kitchen from the bed. So all day long, all orders came out of the bed in the kitchen. And then as you go through the house, just be careful, the doors are low. Mm-hmm. But older people tell you nothing to do with the height of the person. They tell us the bigger you make the door, the bigger the draft. So when you live along the coast, you keep the door small and you keep the house warm. Mm-hmm. And then this is just the food we'd have eaten. So they lived off the land and off the sea, so they did. Mm-hmm. And this is just different types of seaweed.
What is the difference?
Well, that in there is called sloak. This grows on rocks and white sandy beaches, and you boiled it and you added long potatoes. Some people fry it with butter. If you didn't like it, your mother just told you tomorrow, go to the beach and tomorrow just pick something you like. So you had all these different seashells. 45 years ago, this was normal food. This is how people lived. That's about a seaweed there we call a slack mara, which means the rod from the sea. But the mothers took this bit of seaweed off from the beach, made a ring, and that was the teeth and ring for the baby. Bother with the teeth. There's no plastic, no dummies, no dodges. If you had a baby crying all day, that's how you sort that baby out there. And the baby wants it because it's salty. When a baby gets this one, a baby doesn't take what you buy in the shop. What you buy in the shop doesn't have a taste. And this has a taste. And every baby wants this one.
Das ist für dich, für kleine Kinder.
Ah.
Wenn du wieder unleidig bist, kriegst du so ein Stück Seegras und dann kannst du drauf rumkauen.
Aye. And then there was no, as I see you there, it's a bit like chewing gum in today's world. We call it dulse. And you dry it, you chew it, and you buy it in the shop. The problem with this seaweed is if you started eating that one today, there's a really good chance you'd still be eating it tomorrow. And then that's, everything was salted, so that's the fish there, salted. That's fish that's been there since February. Now come back in December, you could still eat them in December. Mm-hmm. That's what salt does. And how they got salt, they went down to the sea. They took water out of the sea, they put it in a big pot, and they boiled the pot till the water disappears. And then you look at the pot, there's no water, but there's salt at the bottom. That's how they get salt.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to bring you now to the wake house. Or not the wake house, but we'll go to the poaching house first.
Yeah, thank you.
So hang on now.
So the houses here are all originally built from here, or?
Aye, just that. Been there since the 1800s. Mm-hmm. This row has been specially built, but there were 14 in a pub here in 1920. Mm-hmm. 14 houses in a pub. And even though they had 14 houses and a pub, even though they're their own pub, 8 out of 14 houses still made their own whiskey. Homemade whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Stille.
So this is the poaching. I'd like you to taste it. Do you want to taste it?
A little bit, yes.
Mm.
My husband is driving, so.
Aye. Well, that'll do you no harm, though.
That's good.
Aye. Feels like more, eh?
So what is the difference between whiskey and pudding?
Well, we can't wait. The minute it comes out of that pipe, mm-hmm. we drink it. Well, in the bar, if it's in whiskey, if it's poaching, or whiskey, it stays in the barrel for so many years. And the more it's in the barrel, the different colours on it. See, it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
Clear. So, in 1920, here in this part of Ireland, poaching went out of control. It devastated this community. So it broke up families, caused really bad rows. And the similarity we have in today's Ireland is drugs. Really bad places today. And by the late 1920s, it was so badly out of control that the Irish government and the Catholic Church came together as one, hoping they could stop it from happening. The government brought on very strict penalties, and you went straight to prison if you caught one glass of poteen. The church did it different. They asked everyone to take a pledge, and they asked everyone to swear to God they'd never drink again. And later on, part of your pledge, you'd wear this pin on your coat that people could see it. So here in Ireland, it became known as a pioneer pin. So when people see a pin or a brooch in your coat, they wouldn't encourage you to take a drink. That began here in 1933. The reason was poteen was out of control, but it was the biggest success the church ever had in Ireland. Quickly spread across the whole of Ireland and to Britain and America. So it remained a mortal sin for every Catholic to 1983. But the reason they're making it is too easy to do. So in the past you got potatoes, you got barley, and you got corn. Mm-hmm. The Ireland we live in today, nobody goes to that effort anymore. Today it's a gallon of water, 2.5 pounds of sugar, and a handful of yeast. Mm-hmm. And it's put into one tank, stays in the tank for 6 weeks till it ferments. And then after 6 weeks, it's put into this wee tank here. You set it on top of the fire so it boils like a kettle. So the steam goes up around this pipe. This pipe now twists and turns the whole way through here and comes out at the bottom. This barrel here you follow with cold water. Now the reason for cold water, you're keeping the pipe inside cold. That's a cooling system. So here it boils like a kettle. The steam's hot at the top. And by the time the steam gets down here, the barrel of cold water has to cool down so it comes out as liquid. On the third time, what comes out at the beginning, so we repeat it three times to purify it, you see. So what comes out at the beginning on the third time, the first one or two cupfuls, we don't drink it. We throw it away into the fields, into the rocks. So in Ireland, they told everybody, they give that first part to the fairies.
Okay.
So Scotland, America, Canada, they do the same. They give it to the angels. Some countries would be the devil's share. Every country in the world is a different story. If you don't give the fairies the first part in Ireland, they believe fairies bring bad luck upon you. You get caught, you went to prison. Or you poison somebody. But the real reason was the steam that rises at the top of the start and comes out at the beginning is methanol, optic nerve poison. So if you drink what you give to the fairies, you went blind. Mm-hmm. So across the world, maybe your country today, you'll hear people say when a man's drunk, they say that man's blind drunk. That's where that saying comes from. The other reason is if methanol doesn't put you blind, it damages the back part of your brain. And the back part of your brain is the balance of your body. And that's what keeps you walking straight today. So the way older people in Donegal explain it to their children, they say to their children, if you get drunk today, for the rest of the day, you'll stagger about, you not know where you are. But sometimes the methanol damages the brain, and the brain doesn't recover. And then for the rest of your life, you stagger about. But with it, you're mentally affected. So if that happened to you them days in Ireland, the way older people explained that was, you're away with the fairies. That's what the fairies did to you. But this wasn't the fairies, this was methanol. But in Ireland, nobody understands methanol. But in Ireland, everybody understands the damage fairies can do to you. So if you look back at them days, the older generation tries to protect the young people of the dangers that lies ahead of them. So in Ireland, when you hear older people talk about the fairies, what they're actually doing, they're warning you there's a danger there of some kind. So if you tell these young people, don't drink that there, you'll go blind, they're not going to listen. But if you bring the fairies into it, they heed the warning quicker. So across the world, in every country, there's a similarity to fairies in every country. So if you don't have fairies in your country, you have a ghost, and if you don't have a ghost, you have a witch. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of warning children, though, of the dangers that lies ahead of them. But see the pipe go down to the barn? We call that a worm. That's a cooling system. That doesn't work unless you bend the pipe the right way, so it's all to do with the temperature. So the pipe you see there is made from copper, so copper bends. But not everybody in Ireland had a copper pipe, so they used a lead pipe. Lead bends the same as copper. But they didn't realise alcohol and lead reacts together. So the whiskey went through the pipe, took a lead of the pipe and gave you lead poisoning. This now means you're unconscious for 2 to 3 days, but you could come around again. And that's the reason in Ireland, we sit beside our dead people for 2 nights. And that became known as a wake. Because they sat at the beginning and they sat and they hoped that person would wake up. That's why it's called wake, you see. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
So I'll bring you now to the wake house and then you can come back. So I'll take you this way. Come this way here.
Okay.
I'll shoot this other button in.
And you also have a home of the fairies here, so you put the fairy shot there.
Fairies. I have big superstitions about fairies one time, and still a lot of people believe in them, but...
I think there was even a motorway...
That's right, down the south of Ireland. So, a lot of the old traditions at wake still happens. So, when somebody dies, the first thing people would do is stop the clock at the actual time he died. Everybody was coming on to pay respects. Everybody would ask the question, what time did he die at? So stopping the clock saves you of answering the first question. Sometimes the rule is you don't put the clock going again as a mark of respect to the person who died. Time's important. So if he died before 12 o'clock last night, that means he's been buried tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
If he dies after 12 o'clock last night, that's different. As today he died, which means the day after tomorrow, he's now buried. So in the past, the strict rule, you bury him on the third day.
Okay.
And who makes the rules in Ireland? It's the churches. Very strict, and they have to be. Certain families would hold on to the body, you see, for too long, hoping for him to wake up. It's never a good enough answer to hear from someone, he died last night. Last night could be yesterday, but last night could be today too.
Okay.
And you can't ask the family who has the funeral. They're sitting beside him, they're hoping he might wake up. They don't want a funeral. They want that person to wake up. So sometimes they'd lay a plate on the chest of the corpse. So the idea of all these people coming to this wake is you can't sit on your own. Because if you tell people what happened before it, they don't believe you. They think you're making stories up, you imagine things. So whenever you go to wake in Ireland, all the people gather in the house. And you're all witnesses. And your job is to keep attention at all times to the person. See the plate?
Mm-hmm.
You watch the plate in case there's a slight movement from it, in case he wasn't dead. See, British history is different. They buried him in Britain. From the coffin to the top of the grave, there had a pipe coming up through the ground. And down through the pipe, a string of cord was attached on the person's hand inside the coffin. Well, above and top of the grave, there was a stick with a bell. So they paid people to stay in the graveyard in case he moved his hand and rattled the bell above. You must have heard them old sayings belonging to Britain. One was, that man was one time saved by the bell. Dead ringer, the dead's ringing the bell. That all comes from a bell on top of the grave. Well, in Ireland, if the plate of snuff didn't move, so it would have been on the plate would be snuff, and they would tell you he snuffed it. That comes from that plate of snuff that sits on the chest of the corpse. See, we don't speak bad about the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we don't speak bad, because people knew them days, they still know today, the last thing leaves most people, if a person's unconscious or in a coma, is the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
They're always afraid he was listening. And then they had a professional mourner, and she made a strange sound and a strange noise. And she was called a keener. Keener is the Irish word for crying. And across the world, you might hear mothers say to children, if children make a lot of noise, a mother shouts, you'll waken the dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's that woman's purpose. She's trying to waken up the dead by making a lot of noise. So in Ireland, we wait 3 days before we bury somebody. And the reason for waiting 3 days, they tell us Christ rose up on the third day. So they tell us must wait 3 days before you bury him. That's the reason for waiting 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
But it all began from the fear of being buried alive. This was a worldwide fear one time. The fear of being buried alive went across the world. Your country and all would have the fear of being buried alive. So maybe I'll bring you on a wee bit more and then you can...
Yeah, lovely.
So they had also people watching because I heard that in Dublin or in Belfast they were also afraid of body snatchers.
Oh, I'm more like them days too. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
There's all these different ones, but the big fear is being buried alive though. So this is about famine in Ireland when there's no food. So that was 1845 to 1848. And we take you through it. A lot of this part of it, no, the read as they go through it, so it tells the story about the famine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bring you a wee bit more now, but I'll keep going this way. Okay.
How many people left that region when the famine hit?
The population of Ireland at the start of the 1800s, I'll take you back here, you see.
Okay.
So the population of Ireland at the start of the 1700s was 3 million, okay. 1800s 4 million, and by 1841 it was 8.2 million. So in 40 years the population had doubled.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the start of the 1800s, France and Britain are at war.
Mm-hmm.
Ireland becomes a food basket for Britain. All the food that Britain needs is grown in Ireland. The country's booming, nobody unemployed. Most of it's grain.
Mm-hmm.
But when the war goes over, Britain doesn't eat the food because they're back growing their own. So all these people quickly become unemployed. So 8.5 million people then were living in Ireland by 1845, that's the start of the famine. 8.5 million people living in Ireland, works out as 700 people are living per square mile on all the cultivated land of Ireland. If every person in Ireland was given an equal share of cultivated land, works out at less than an acre of land per person. The only crop they can grow that gives enough food that feeds the family on a small piece of land for the whole year is potatoes. People may ask, why potatoes? But our land's sand. Potatoes grow in sand. We get all the rain. Grows in the rich clay ground. Grows in the cold mossy type ground. Grows in the side of mountains, potatoes. Becomes the main crop. But a disease had it known as blight. Mm-hmm. And there was no food. So people had no food then. And that was the problem. 8.5 million people live in Ireland with no industry and just depending on small portions of land to feed themselves.
And fish was an option?
Hmm?
Fish was not an option?
Well, fish was an option if you're beside the sea. But most people know anytime there comes poverty, boats and everything deteriorates. No, everything. People don't have money to repair nets and things like that. Wherever there's poverty, poverty long before that. Also in 1839, Ireland struck by a massive storm on the 6th of January 1839. And the storm lifted the sand from the beach in this area, covered this whole area with sand, and covered farms and all that here. Nothing at sea survives the storm on the west coast. And everything's blown out of the sea up onto the land, and anything on the land is blown out onto the sea on the east coast. So it was a massive storm. So it destroyed a lot of boats too, that storm. How the best storm maybe is best remembered, if you were to check it out, is in 1909, the British government brings out the first pension for people. And the first pension they bring out in 1909 is for people 70 years or over. So when they bring out the first pension, a lot of people can't prove what age they were. When they're born, there's no registry of birth. So the way the British government worked it out for the first pension, if any person could prove to the government they were born before the night of the big storm, you'd be entitled to get your pension, mm-hmm. if you can prove it. And that's how they worked out the first pension in Britain. Okay. This storm is so well remembered. But what happened in Ireland was, 6 years after the storm comes the famine. Mm-hmm. And then it was the 6th of January, 1839, which was the 6th of January is a holy day in Ireland. It's called the Epiphany. Some people believed this was a sign coming from God. Something worse was coming. So they all thought it was a sign from God, the storm. It's all religious too, you know, but mm-hmm. but that's how it starts off. And then, fishing wasn't great, no.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what to go on here now?
You put a lot of love in that museum, lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of work in it, eh?
Yeah.
So this is the conditions I'm living in. That's built with sod, with grass, which is turf maybe. Not remembered for people being poor. With elderly people remember these, in their 90s now. And how they remember them, if a girl had a baby, if the girl wasn't married, mm-hmm. the girl was moved away from the community. Or something like this. Ireland, not long ago, there was a superstition, a belief in Ireland, if a girl had a baby outside of marriage, would bring that bad luck to her family, but to her community. That continued to happen in Ireland until the different churches took over the role of looking after girls and babies, so convents, nuns or laundries. This way I think in Ireland, not hundreds of years ago, the last laundry in Ireland closed in the 1990s. So that's less than 30 years ago, we in Ireland were thinking of that. We get elderly people come in here and they remember their parents saying to them, no, if you don't behave yourself, I'll send you to a sod house. Especially to girls, if you don't behave yourself, you'll end up in a sod house. And that's what they meant by that. Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. But it's different to a working house, isn't it?
Well, that's before.
Okay.
Sod houses for girls that had babies mm-hmm. outside of marriage. And then the church comes on later. This is before the church gets involved. So people look back and just say the church did this and the church did that. Nobody goes back a wee bit further. And then this is how the people treated them.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't good for girls. And then, that's the evictions here. This one is the eviction. So, Britain ruled Ireland. They divided Ireland into big estates, like large farms. The landlord owns the big estate. You come along, you rent the land of the landlord, you build a house in it, you own the house, but you never own the land underneath the house.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. So the landlord wants rent for his land. If he didn't pay him, he told you to get out of the house. He put you out of the house. When he got you out, the first thing he did, he nailed 4 or 5 battens across your door. And what the battens across the door means, if you break down the battens, go back into the house again after the landlord leaves, you committed a crime. You broke the law. And the crime was named breaking and entering.
Because
mm-hmm. you broke the timber across the door, you see.
Yeah.
And you entered the house legally. And because you went in there, you don't get a second chance. The next time the landlord demands rent, you don't pay him, he knocks it down. So how he knocks it down, the pole balances on the chain. You pull it back and you swing it, hits the house and the house falls. That's called a battering ram.
Oh, okay.
So... And then this is just done in miniature and gives you an idea how the landlord lived.
Mm-hmm. That's quite different.
So landlords who live in Ireland try to copy the landlords who live in Europe. So in Europe, landlords have big fancy houses and great gardens, so Irish landlords did the same. So they built a big house, but they kept competing against one another. If the landlord down the road built a house, they got the one up the road, felt he should do the same, and he built a bigger house. And how they funded this way of life, like us in the world today, they borrowed money. And why people would lend them money, and how they intend to pay it back. They believed all they had to do, every year they divide their estate into smaller portions. Every year the population's rising very fast. So people in Ireland, if they want to survive, need land. He rents it to the farmer pays him a rent. He multiplies his money every year because the population's rising. And every year, no bother paying off the debt, he keeps creating. Well, the landlord didn't see coming, but neither do we, a recession. The farmer stopped paying the rent. And when the farmer stopped paying the rent, the landlord can't pay off the debt he creates. So what all the landlords in Ireland then starts doing, they export food. They need money to pay off their debt. You know, pay off their debt. And that's how all the people were saying, why all the food left? But the landlord had borrowed so much money too. No, he's in debt.
And if a family had like 10 children, the land was also divided into 10?
Aye, on the Catholic side, religious. On the Protestant community, usually a farm was never broken up. The oldest person got the farm, the rest was told to emigrate.
Otherwise, and that's why they had a better chance to survive?
Aye. Yeah. Aye, that's one of the reasons, huh? Well, the Catholic said they kept dividing up and dividing up got smaller and smaller. Now, a lot of this now, we have always leave them here and they wander through it. I'll give you 10 minutes, you can wander through it there on your own. And then and I'll let you go then and let and the girl will be leaving then.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Aye?
Yeah, okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Also, was jetzt hier in dem Museum auch sehr spannend ist, es ist alles überdacht. Also man kann es auch an einem Regentag anschauen. Was gefällt denn dir hier an dem Museum?
Mir gefällt hier die da war Hütte Pferde und jetzt gucken wir doch hier an, was ist das? Oh mein Gott, Pferd, Pferd, Pferde, 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 da gibt's Pferd. Pferd, möchtest du was reden? Ich glaube, das hat gesagt, das mag Mikrofon.
Ich finde das Pferd ein Bildchen drauf. Und das Pferd bei dem Pferdetutschen finde ich auch da drauf. Und auch dieses Pferd finde ich cool mit die Tutsche. Und die Tankstelle finde ich cool. Und Ende.
Das Doag Famine Village ist auf der Innishowen-Halbinsel, ca. 30 Minuten von Malinhead und von Greencastle entfernt. Das Dorf ist von März bis Oktober 7 Tage in der Woche von 10 bis 17 Uhr geöffnet. Die Eintrittspreise für Erwachsene liegen ca. bei 12,50 Euro und bei Kindern unter 16 Jahren bei 6,50 Euro. Kinder unter 4 Jahren haben freien Eintritt, aber die Preise können sich ändern. Eine Führung dauert zwischen 30 und 45 Minuten und bietet eben einen Einblick in diese turbulente Phase der irischen Geschichte. Die Highlights sind verschiedene Szenen, wie zum Beispiel eben eine typisch irische Totenwache, aber auch zum Beispiel zeigt es, wie ein irisches Pächterhaus von der Polizei abgedeckt wird oder aber in welchen ärmlichen Behausungen bis hin zum Erdloch die damaligen Menschen hausen mussten. Fotografisch möchte ich dir die Innishowen 100 Coastal Scenic Route ans Herz legen. Es ist eine der vielen malerischen Straßen entlang der irischen Küste. Die Innishowen 100 ist ungefähr 160 Kilometer lang entlang der Halbinsel Innishowen in der Grafschaft Donegal. Diese Route ist nicht nur eine Reise durch atemberaubende Landschaften, sondern auch eine Zeitreise durch die reiche Geschichte und Kultur dieser einzigartigen Region. Beginnend in Newton Cunningham führt die Innishowen 100 durch eine Vielzahl von Landschaften, von sanften Hügeln und fruchtbaren Landschaftsflächen bis hin zu dramatischen Klippen und versteckten Stränden. Die Route ist benannt nach ihrer Länge in Meilen. Früher war ja Meilen die Distanzmaßeinheit in Irland. Und bietet eine Fülle von Sehenswürdigkeiten, die dich dazu einladen, innezuhalten und die Schönheit der Natur und der Landschaft zu genießen. Egal, ob ihr Liquid Sunshine oder richtigen Sonnenschein habt, es lohnt sich auf jeden Fall anzuhalten und ein paar Fotos zu machen. Jetzt hoffe ich, dass dir diese Episode gefallen hat. Wenn du mal die Lust verspüren würdest, das alles live zu sehen, dann begleite uns doch auf einer unserer Fototouren. Oder aber, wenn du nicht so lange warten willst, dann komm doch in unsere Gruppe auf Facebook, Erlebnis Irland. Dort kannst du direkt mit uns kommunizieren, chatten, aber auch über unsere Facebook-Seite und aktuelle Neuigkeiten direkt erfahren. Schön, dass du mit dabei warst. Ich wünsche dir noch einen ganz, ganz tollen Tag und eine ganz, ganz tolle Woche. Bis bald, dein Chris und
deine Fee.